Welcome back to the Moms Get It Done podcast. I'm Leslie Osborne. Today, I have the privilege and honor of interviewing Sandy Pearson, the president and CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Michigan. Her accomplishments in her career and personal life are so impressive, and I'm so happy she's sharing her story with us today. Sandy is a graduate of Michigan State University's Eli Broad College of Business. Sandy began her career in housing with the Michigan State Housing Development Authority, where she spent 16 years working in civil rights, fair housing, all federally funded housing programs, and co-writing the Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher Key to Own home ownership program, transitioning people from renting to realizing their dreams of owning a home. In the years she has been with Habitat of Humanity of Michigan, she has provided leadership with housing advocacy, both in Michigan and nationally, serving on international councils and committees. Her tenure with Habitat for Humanity has included extensive travel throughout Michigan, the U.S., and other nations. Sandy is the recipient of the 2016 DuVernay Award, Michigan's top honor in affordable housing and community development. Sandy and her husband, Rob, have been married for 27 years and have three daughters who represent fifth-generation Portland St. Patrick's School and Church and third-generation MSU Spartans. Rob sings Elvis, Johnny Cash, and oldies tunes with a band made up of her uncles. They have three dogs and enjoy spending time as a family having fun. Sandy's passion is to team up with people who can use a hand, a coach, a mentor, a connector in achieving their life goals. She has a wonderful life, and I'm so happy that she's here to share her story today. Without further ado, please welcome Sandy Pearson. I'd like to welcome my next guest, Sandy Pearson. She is the CEO for Habitat for Humanity. Thank you, Sandy, for being here.
Thank you for having me. This is a very welcome opportunity to talk with you.
Yes, I'm so thrilled that we get to talk today. I really want to get into, you know, a lot of my listeners are women that are rising to the top, and you have, you know, grown children, and you are at the top. You're the CEO for Habitat for Humanity. And I'd love to just hear about, you know, how did you get into, not necessarily this role specifically, but like, how did you start out and, you know, your journey throughout, you know, becoming the CEO?
And it has been quite a journey. And this year was sort of a tipping point that our youngest daughter of three daughters is 18. Oh. I'm now 51. So I've got that opportunity where my husband and I can sit back and say, we feel like we've done well. And that's quite an achievement for us, because you don't know until you know, right?
Yeah.
And there's still a lot of learning to know about, you know, if the girls achieve what they want to achieve and so forth. But we're on a good path. And it all started when I was raised in a lower income family, mm-hmm. that if I wanted something, I had to work for it because we had very limited income. And of course, I was a child that wanted a lot of things, and I wanted to participate in sports and so forth. And so I started working at a very young age. And I've been paying into Social Security, I like to say, since I was 13, because official and on record, and earned income years before that. You know, one of the goals that I had to do for myself that my parents really encouraged was to go to college. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Michigan State University, which was kind of a big, scary thing because I'm from a small town. But that was a gift that I was determined to give to myself with the help and support of my parents, of course. Mm-hmm. We always had low income, but a very middle class mentality, and just do what needs to be done to get it done. And I did graduate with a business degree from Michigan State University. While I was there, you know, I went through a discovery. I was very interested in racial relations and dynamics, and being a woman of business growing up in the 80s, wanting to break through that glass ceiling, but also having a heart for service. And, you know, and I thought, how, if I'm going to spend 8 hours or more a day working, I really want it to count. That mattered to me very much.
Yeah.
And so I was intrigued by a job offer that I received with the Michigan State Housing Development Authority and the Department of Civil Rights.
Yeah.
And that's how I was connected to housing. It wasn't a goal before that point in time, but I was really drawn to wanting to learn more about race relations and what difference I could make, you know, with the skills and talents that I had.
Yeah.
knowing that that's so important, and we know that the importance of that today. So that was an invaluable experience. Mm-hmm. But going back just a little bit for a moment, I will say that I was the first woman in my dad's family to achieve a college degree.
Wow.
Many of my cousins after me did so. You know, my parents were teenage parents. You know, my dad served in the Vietnam War. They were workers. They always volunteered, and they still do today. So I had that as an example of service and work ethic and so forth. And I've carried that all the way through. And our kids would tell you today that that ethic was instilled in them as well.
Yeah.
And I met my husband out at MSU, and we share those values. And in fact, he pushes me. I think we're a family of pushers, and we lift each other up, and that's how our family dynamic is.
I really like that. I feel like our family is like that too. Like, we really are a team, and we support each other, and it's a really good piece of the formula for success. So tell me a little bit about the Michigan Housing Authority. I know that we talked previously about job partnering and what you were sort of a pioneer for this, I feel like.
I know. When I look back, I think, wow, how did I have the guts to do that? It was really always more of a determination. I was always labeled a determined child, you know, that one that you don't quite know what to do with. And I channeled that determination into really trying to achieve what I wanted, which, it, like I mentioned, the glass ceiling before. I wanted to be a professional. I wanted it all. I wanted a great marriage, a great family, be a great mother, and have a career and do very well with it and make achievements there. So when I worked at the Housing Authority, I was straight out of college, and my husband and I got married. 3 years later, we had our first child. And that's when, you know, I had a few years under my belt in my working position.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a good track record and so forth. And I found another woman in my community that she wanted to work, have a job share. And I wanted a job share. And we knew one another. And we said, let's do this. Like, let's state a case. Let's go out there and see if we can find that perfect match for us to be a job share together without compromising our career ambitions.
Yeah.
And so we wrote a paper and we laid out our case, and we said, here are the benefits. We understand the perceived drawbacks. Here's how we would address them. But we want to be seriously considered for a single professional position in the state government, because she worked for a different department. I worked in housing. Mm-hmm. We took these to the paper to our employers. They both said, no, we are not going to accommodate this. And we said, fine, we are going to begin interviewing as a pair. Within 3 months, we were offered more than one job opportunity to leave our current positions. And my employer said, whoa, I did not think you would pull this off, and we don't want to lose you. And so I will try to get this through the system and approved, and it was successful. And I will tell you that we had to fight for that every step of the way. And it was never an easy thing to even keep in place once we had secured the position, but we moved from up the ladder together at the Michigan State Housing Development Authority. She is still there. We were so successful in our positions that we were offered other opportunities, and we kept saying no because we were satisfied. We were connecting people, other primarily single women with children, with homeownership opportunities and putting those deals together and serving as coaches and counselors with them. And we're both still doing that work today because we have safe, secure homes that our families can thrive in. We want that for everybody. And so that's been a driving force in continuing in the housing work that we do. But I was actually told, we want you to do that for all these other programs. And I was put into executive office and started building skills working for a board and so forth. And that's where I met leadership of Habitat for Humanity that ultimately resulted in me transferring into the not-for-profit sector.
This story, I think, is so important because specifically the job, I mean, your entire story, but specifically the job share, because at the time that you did this, this wasn't a thing. Like, this wasn't something
It's still not.
I hear about it, but I don't actually know anybody that has it. You know, people talk about it and things in the mom communities, especially professional mom communities, but I don't actually know anyone that's doing it. So the fact that you guys stated your case, went to your bosses, they said no, and you just kept going is brilliant. It's just amazing. And also, it shows how valuable you were to your company, because once they saw that you were going to leave, they kept you. And if you're valuable to your employer and to yourself and to your family, it really can be a successful situation. And just the fact that you and this other woman had, you know, the guts to go after it is huge. And I think it's so impressive. And it can show other moms just how you can be creative and you can be there for both and climb and do the thing. And no, it's not easy and it's worth it. And I think that it was for you.
And you hit on some key points. I mean, in all reality, we were willing to sacrifice pay, you know, sharing a job, but do what we needed to do to keep that going. So there were definitely many hours that we worked that we were not paid for. And, you know, that's something that as women, we can try to address moving forward.
Yeah.
Because we were working pretty much full time each, but it was worth it to us to to achieve the career goals, stay on that path so that when we were ready to go full time again and had our own self-satisfaction with our balance, that we were willing to, you know, make those sacrifices, whether they're right or wrong or indifferent, but it was the reality that we were very well aware of and chose.
Yeah, absolutely. And for you even to be aware of this alternate reality that you created is just so impressive to me. And I think that women, and especially working women now, feel, you know, that they have to do and be certain things to climb, and there is room to, I don't want to say compromise, because that you didn't at all, but that there's room, like there's room to create something new. And I think that that's really big. So
yeah, it's like a negotiation.
Yeah. Everything is.
Yes.
Even with, especially with my children, right?
Exactly.
So let's talk about how you got into Habitat for Humanity. And I know you were saying you transferred to the nonprofit for the first time. Let's hear about that experience.
So the leader of Habitat for Humanity, the founder, the Reverend Dr. Ken Benson, reached out to me and he said, "Sandy, you know, I have this vacancy for a chief operating officer. I've established a relationship with you. I'm looking for someone that will bring Habitat full into the housing industry. Mm-hmm. And can you help me identify that candidate to do so?" And I began referring people to him. He went through quite a long interview process. And we just kept talking and we kept working together in the legislature and advocating for housing positions and policies. And I was very fond of the organization. And the day came where I just said, "Ken, maybe I'm the perfect candidate." But it took a while to get there because I was so comfortable where I was. You know, I was the insurance provider for our family. I was in executive office of where I was working.
Yeah.
I had a job that, you know, many people would be completely satisfied to stop right there and just, you know, ride that out. And I was drawn to not-for-profit. It was that social service component with me, that inner drive to keep going, keep seeing what was out there. Yeah. And I had fire in my belly and I just, you know, and I took the leap, even though Ken was like, "We don't have all of these benefits that you currently have." We wear many more hats. Like, we don't just sell homes to families, you know, we're in real estate, we are construction, we're in retail, we're global, you know, we're bigger than one community and one state and one nation. And I was so drawn and driven by that, as opposed to being scared of it. I was scared of it, but so drawn and so fascinated that I took that leap.
That's so great. I like that you just said that you were scared of it and you were fascinated by it. And I feel like, you know, now that I'm running my own company and, you know, my husband does too, I think we have that same conversation all the time. we're scared, but it sounds amazing. So we're just going to do it anyway. And then it led you to this really amazing thing. So you were COO for how many years? 3 years?
It was about 3 years, 2008 to October of 2010. And all along, you know, Ken said that he had a succession plan. He knew when he was going to retire. And there was still pressure at that time for him to hire a man. You know, there were many candidates who were men, very strong candidates, you know, former legislators and company CEOs who were looking for the next thing. And, you know, people within Habitat for Humanity. And I was a young mother. I mean, I started when I was 38 years old. All three of our children were under the age of 10. And Ken was asking me, you know, are you interested? And I said, absolutely not. I'm more comfortable being number two. Mm-hmm. I can run a business. I can help you achieve goals. But I can't. You know, I want a successful marriage. I want a successful family. This is like a lot of travel. And so finally, but he just didn't hire a successor. He kept waiting for me. He spent a lot of time with my husband and me, and I spent time with his wife. And, you know, she was very concerned for me. My mother was very concerned for me, telling me you need to spend more time at home. And finally, I said, I will do this. And the board really wanted me as well. They thought I was very strategic, very planful, you know, had a lot of vision and was able to execute. And I am all of those things and have done these things. But as far as the family, we did sit down before this decision was made as a family. I'll never forget. We've always lived in this one house. And I will say that was one of the keys to our success. But we sat down in the room right next to me and said to the girls, you know, I said, I've been a parent for 10 years. You know, I had our oldest 10 years ago. Yeah. And I'm ready for the next thing, but the family has to be ready for it as well. And I said, if I take this position, I'm going to be traveling all over the place all the time, all over Michigan. Michigan's a big state, national and global. I'm going to be on national committees and so forth. I said, so I need to know that the three of you, plus your dad here, that we can do this, that, you know, you are going to have a lot of freedom, and the environment that we will have is that we trust you, that you have this freedom, you are independent, that you are covering for one another, that we are operating as a team toward our success. And we'll keep going that way, and it works. We will assume it's working until and unless it doesn't work. And they were so excited when they heard about the role and the position. It was like, it could make me cry right now, that they all unified said, we want you to do this. My husband and the girls, we've got this covered. We are a team, you know, and that is when we, you know, right down to, you're going to have to be doing your own laundry, packing. I never was one to pack their lunches, and they are the type that pack their own lunches. If we went up into their bedrooms right now, you're going to see wall calendars where everything is mapped out. We are super planners. And we talk to each other. If we need someone to step in and give us some support, we do that. Yeah. And I'm the most needy of all of all of them, where I say, you know, I can't do this, you know, and I need, and so my husband will step up, or our daughters now that they're adults, and they, don't worry, mom, we got it. Just go do your thing. We got it.
I love that. And I think that it's so important that, you know, you had this discussion beforehand, because people, you know, I remember my mom had a discussion with me before she married her now husband, and I was very young, but she was like, we need to be a team with this together. And it was such a big pivotal moment for me. And this is not the same, but you know, it's the same type of conversation. And you, that moment for you and your family was huge. And I think that when women want to jump into something bigger or something, you know, and I don't want to say it's for you, it is for you because you are very successful and you're, you know, you love that and you love where you've gotten. But I also want to say, you know, it's something for everybody and everybody came together. And I think that this part of it is so huge. And this is something I'm going to start implementing in my family. I mean, I already have since our last talk, that we are a team and we support each other and it can be that way. And you can raise little humans to be that way too. I mean, we talked before, my kids already have calendars and they're 7 and 4 and they know when things are happening. And you just said that. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. We do that too. And, you know, growing independent humans is really what we all want, right? Like every mother wants their kid to be, you know, take responsibility for their lives and all of those things that you did. And that must feel so great. You said at the beginning of the conversation, you said, my husband and I are actually at a place where we're like, oh my gosh, we did it. You know, they're amazing.
They are. And again, you hit on some key points of independence and empowerment. You know, when I sent a family chat that said, I'm going to be interviewed for this podcast, what, you know, I would like your feedback. I guess I learned that we're very inclusive and respectful of one another and value one another. And I said, what were some of the key ingredients, you know, do you agree that we're successful and why? And they, each daughter sent a lovely text that just said, you empowered us. We were expected to be independent. We are independent. And you gave us so much independence and trust that we wanted to make great choices and decisions. It's almost like we didn't cave into peer pressure, you know, on any level, because what the work of our family was doing is so important, you know, and so valuable. And like I said, I can't hardly talk
I teared a little bit when you said it. I'm not going to lie. I was that must have been the most amazing thing to hear.
Yeah. I mean, I can read you their text right here. It just, and they said, you know, we watched you work and that made us want to work. And we're in college now and working 2 and 3 jobs. You know, we didn't promise our kids that their college was paid for. We said, we don't know how we're going to do it. We just know that we're going to do this. You know, we're going to do what we can. We need you to do what you can. And we're in this together. And, you know, we have one daughter that graduated with minimal college debt, one daughter who's going to graduate with no college debt. Oh, and we all worked.
Yeah.
We worked like nothing. They didn't even get a scholarship. They're brilliant, but there's like zero scholarships in this conversation, you know? And by the way, they all went to Michigan State University and our senior in high school was just accepted there. And again, that has nothing to do with, they just decided they wanted to go there and they achieved it, but that kept them focused in their school life. Cause we said, you know, it's really not an easy thing to get accepted there. Yeah. You know, you have to meet these standards, but again, the planning of knowing what are the standards, like knowing that before they enter high school so that they have the goal sheet in front of them every single day to, I got to get these scores, you know, and every course matters. And so that's how they live their lives. Now, I want to be sure to express though too, that we have a lot of fun. We have like a calm household. We are not like, you know,
it doesn't sound that way.
We actually do this I think because it's so planful and so intentional that there is a great vibe. We love being together. We love those opportunities, you know, of having our family moments and experiences. They want to be with us. We want to be with them. And so we did strike a balance. We just did.
Yeah, for sure. One of the other things that we mentioned before when we talked about it was about how you not only have the support of your family, but of your community, and how.
Absolutely. You
know, I think this is big, and it's big for me for sure. So tell us a little bit about that.
You know, I got to tell you that, you know, whether it was their teachers, I said, you know, I'm going to be gone. Like, I am not the mom that is coming to the parent meetings. I'm not going to be there all the time. When you call me, I'm going to be in Atlanta or Vietnam. Yeah. You know, it's like, I am not going to be there.
Yeah.
And so, and I am, you know, looking back, I was there more than I even thought that I would be, but I wanted to set expectations straight up. And I said, you know, if there are issues, I really do want you to call me. Like, I want you to help me address things quickly, swiftly. And I had a couple of those moments. And, you know, what it came down to was, again, sitting down with the teacher and the daughter and saying, what's our work plan? How are we going to accomplish this? And having the daughter lead that discussion. So that's one example. Another example is they were very involved in sports and things. And you need drivers, you need food, you need all of the supports there. And I would sign up, you know, the more planful it can be, the better involved I could be. But there were many, many times when my work, even if I said, I'm going to be available here, and then I wasn't, but I had a network, us moms worked together as a team as well, where I had a couple of different women that I could call in each grade of the girls and say, you know what, I can't drive tonight. Can you do this? And they would say yes. And we set up, you know, driving our kids to school. And, you know, there might have been a year I didn't start my work in the office until 8:30 in the morning, which was kind of a stressor for me because I get up and go. But that I did very intentionally try to be a contributor, and I was, and then also have that network of people, including my parents and my husband, big time. And that's something we didn't talk about the last time, but he actually changed jobs to support the family.
Oh my gosh.
So when I joined Habitat for Humanity, he actually left the manufacturing industry and went into government to, you know, for the reasons of just having a more predictable work schedule and so forth. And that was also a key, but, you know, he could have been a big time person in the manufacturing world. And he was, when he left, he was up there, and he said, you love what you do, you make a difference in people's lives. As a family, we want to be part of that, and here's how we're going to contribute. That was another example.
That's huge. And I think having a strong partner and a strong relationship, you know, it doesn't just happen. Like, I think that people look at, you know, others' relationships and think, oh, they're so balanced and they support each other and all of these things. But really at the end of the day, it takes so much work to accomplish that between two people that have kids running around and careers and all of those things. So kudos to you guys for having that insight, having that thought where you needed to come together and really be a team and really support one another in that way. You know, I have a similar situation. My husband's a CTO of a medical technology company, and now I have my company, but, you know, we do know who's coming. I don't want to say first, but you know what I'm saying. The same thing with you. You know, we want to make sure that I have something predictable so that he is free too. You know, and maybe it'll shift one day. And that does happen with couples, and it happens with families. Like,
well, that was our shift. I mean, I was like the one who took care of the finances and the appointments for the first 10 years of parenthood. Yeah. He did it for the next 10, now going on 14 years, you know, and I am starting to think of, you know, in my future, a shift again, where I want to support the daughters as mothers, you know, and so I might want a less a schedule that's more predictable again for those reasons. I can see that happening. Yep.
Of course. Oh my gosh, they're getting old enough to think about that. That's so amazing. That's so amazing. My mother is like the best. She loved becoming a grandmother. It was like I think it's her favorite thing she's ever done. And she's really amazing. Yeah. So I like this. I love everything that you've talked to us about. I love that I can implement these things in my family right now. And I know that my listeners can too. and raising independent humans is all of our goal. And the fact that you've done it and you've been successful in so many parts of your life is just so impressive to me. So I'm so honored to have you on. I am really interested in hearing a little bit about Habitat for Humanity and, you know, what are they doing right now? Like, how can we support Habitat? I know that this is one of the most amazing organizations and provides so much for so many people. And I really want to make sure that we know where we can help.
Thank you for that. What I love most about Habitat for Humanity is that I've met so many people. Everybody wants the same thing. We all want a roof over our heads. We want education for our children. We want health for our family. And we want the opportunity and respect to achieve these things and to, you know, have the employment that can pay for and fuel these opportunities. And so every day we work very diligently to extend the opportunities to have safe and healthy housing, which leads to better employment, which leads to healthy families and education and so forth and more opportunity. And to learn more about what we do, you know, we're at habitatmichigan.org. You can find an affiliate in your local geographic area. We've got more than 50 habitats all throughout Michigan. Lots of people like to go on habitat builds outside of Michigan and in other countries.
Yes.
You know, Vietnam veterans heal with one another by going on a build in Vietnam. It's just an amazing organization that brings people together in action and service to one another. And so thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit about that. And I'm anybody's welcome. You will find my picture and phone number, and my cell phone number is the same number I've used, whether I was at the Housing Authority, Habitat. It's out there. It's all over the web. Okay. I'm always happy to take calls and questions, and our website is a great resource, habitatmichigan.org.
I'll definitely put that link in the show notes, and I encourage anyone, I know we're in COVID times right now and things are a little bit different, but, you know, donations always work, and, you know,
you got to have money to make the wheels turn.
You definitely do, and yeah. I know that, you know, the holidays are coming, and my family is always looking for ways to donate. Where should we, you know, be putting our money this year? And I think Habitat for Humanity is a really good place to do that. So everybody, I'll put the links in the show notes. So I just want to thank you so much again for sharing your story with us. I am just so honored that you would take your time to tell my listeners how you do it all. And I just so value that. So thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for the time spent. I really enjoyed. I got to know myself better through this. And I can't wait for family to sit down and watch this.
I love hearing that. I'm so glad. Thank you so much, yes. Sandy.
Thank you.
I'm so happy Sandy was on the show today. I loved hearing about her life. And one of the biggest takeaways that I took from it is that she lives her life in a very intentional way. So she's always setting herself up for success, including others to support her. And she supports others. She taught her kids to be independent people with their own roles and responsibilities. And I'm definitely going to take that advice in my own family. Thank you for listening today. Definitely check out the link to Habitat for Humanity of Michigan and donate if you can, or volunteer your time, because it's a worthy, worthy thing to do. Thank you all for listening. I know we can do it all together.